Today on the podcast, a mantelpiece moment that reminds me to shop secondhand, a novel that kicked off a worldwide cultural phenomenon, and of course, what magical book I have pulled down from my to-be-read shelf. All of that and more this week on A Novel Review. Hello and welcome to the literature podcast, A Novel Review. My name is Seamus, your host, and together we will discuss, dissect, and explore the wonderful world of literature, and the wonderful world of literature is a vast and dense jungle, so let's start making our way through, one book at a time. Hey guys, welcome, thanks for joining me for another episode of A Novel Review, the podcast exploring the wonderful world of literature. My name is Seamus, I am your host, and for today's episode, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. But before I jump into this book, I always take a moment to reflect on any mantelpiece moments, something to highlight from the week past. And in this past week, I was in my local charity shop, one of them, and naturally when in these shops, I always head straight for the book section. And I found this absolute beauty, The Wager by David Gran. The cover on the book is simply incredible, a ship battling a storm in the ocean. And I originally scouted this book as a possible one to do my Judging a Book by Its Cover episode, which of course I went with Cherry by Joanne Beard instead, because this one is called The Wager, A Tale of Shipwreck, Mutiny, and Murder. So that's kind of the story right there. It wouldn't have been too much judging, which would have been cheating, which would have been no fun. Nonetheless, I still wanted to get it because, I don't know, the cover is just so incredible. David Gran, for reference, the author, he released his book last year in 2023. He also wrote Killers of the Flower Moon, which of course has now been turned into a film by Martin Scorsese. So he's having a pretty good 12 months. And yeah, I mean, I was in the shop, I saw it, it was hardcover, it looks brand new, it looks like it hasn't been touched, and I decided to tempt myself and open it up, see how much it cost. Brand new, it's normally £20, this one was £4, so an obvious choice in the end. I decided to purchase it on the spot, and yeah, just a reminder that, you know, you never know what kind of buried treasure you're going to find when rifling through some of these shops. They're always, you know, good fun, so make sure you check out the book sections more often. Housekeeping, as always, all the scripts from the episodes are available on the website, and there should be closed captions on the YouTube videos around here. Also, if you could like, subscribe, and 5-star review, I really appreciate it, and it helps other people find the show, and that is much appreciated, so thank you for that. Here we are, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Ever since I said I was doing this, my Instagram has just been overrun with Harry Potter information, which I have naturally been passing on to you guys, perhaps even to an excess, if that even exists. No, I'm glad to be here and be able to finally start talking about it, discussing it, the first of 7 books. So much to unpack, to discuss, to consider, and to think about, but for me, this first book was really about setting the scene for the following books. They, of course, all connect. But for this, I will try to keep the conversation isolated to just this book. But I admit that is going to be difficult. Now, for those who are odd and haven't read the book or seen the films, I will do an overview of the book. Basically, Harry is an orphan boy living with his terrible aunt and uncle and cousin. They don't treat him that nicely, even making him live in the room under the stairs. I say room, I mean closet or cupboard. But basically the room where we push as much stuff as we can. Anyways, basically along comes Hagrid, who is an enormous character, who tells Harry not only is he a wizard, but that he is one of the most famous wizards of all time. When he was a baby, there was a dark wizard who must not be named, although I will name him as Voldemort, who killed Harry's parents and went to kill Harry with the killing curse. Only the curse backfired for the first time in history, and so Voldemort was defeated and Harry, being just a defenseless baby, becomes inadvertently the one who destroyed Voldemort and the only person to survive the killing curse. Not bad. Now, age-appropriate Harry is set to begin his education at the Wizarding School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, and so begins the tale of a magical world that Harry steps into, Hogwarts. And he might think that stepping into a new life is full of wonder, you know, full of chance, a chance to escape his current humdrum life, the abuse that he has lived through and lived under. What he doesn't realize is this world of wizards and witches is just not all sunshine and rainbows. So, let's dive into the meat of this story. I said this on a previous podcast episode, but I cannot remember ever reading this book as a child. So when it came to this reread, I was unsure if I personally had read this book. I have had it read to me as a child, and then of course watching the movies a lot. But reading it, I was unsure of from my own personal experience. So that when I first started to read it, I was surprised at how ridiculous the story seemed, how the characters just seemed like caricatures. On the back of the book, J.K. Rowling is compared to Roald Dahl as a children's writer, and she is celebrated as a children's writer. I do wonder what her thoughts were at reading these comments. Annoyance? Patience? Giddy, giddy excitement? J.K. Rowling knew the story of Harry Potter when she started to write it. Maybe not all the details, not every scene, but she already had the ending in mind, already knew the conclusion. Basically, she knew that this story, this first installment of the series, was only a precursor, a warm-up to a story that might concern kids now, but is in no way childish. And it is a book and series that rewards rereads. Because Rowling already had the ending in mind, there are small glimmers of foreshadowing that maybe she didn't even know at the time, but maybe she did. Take this one for example. Heading to Gringotts for the first time, Hagrid says that it is probably the safest place except for maybe Hogwarts. Of course, after some time, Harry asks this very direct question. Why would you be mad to try and rob Gringotts? A very simple line made brilliant by the fact that in the final book, although we're not there yet, but in the final book, who tries to rob Gringotts? Harry. Now, this second one, I have to admit, I did not catch. I did not pick up on it when I was reading the book. Someone else did, and it appeared on my Instagram, but it's absolutely brilliant, and I think it's too good to pass up. So I should have got their name, actually, to give them credit, but alas, here we are. In the Dark Forest, when Harry is serving his detention, Voldemort appears and rears up after sucking the blood of a unicorn. After that, a centaur intervenes, and after being saved and carried away by the centaur, another centaur comes into the scene and implies that it was a mistake to get involved in saving Harry from Voldemort after what the centaurs had read in the stars. The implication being that Harry should have been left to be killed by Voldemort in the Dark Forest because the centaurs had read it in the stars. A very, very subtle and yet perfect piece of foreshadowing because, spoilers if you are one of those weirdos that has not read the books or seen the movies, that happens in the last book. But let's move away now from foreshadowing to writing style. My first thoughts, along with what I've just said, were also concerned with her writing style. She has such a sharp style that doesn't feel like it's cutting through you or the text itself. That being said, in the early stages of reading, I felt that some of the scenes didn't flow as much as I would have liked, but this is a very short book when you consider how much happens inside it. One thing I had clearly forgotten was in the very, very early stages when Harry is a baby, Voldemort is of course vanquished and all the witches and wizards of the world are so happy to the point that they are even exclaiming the good news to muggles, the non-magic folk of the world like you and I. I said this in another episode and will say it now. The early stages of this book do feel like everyone is a caricature of who they are trying to be. This is not a criticism. I think I'm just constantly looking back on the silliness of these scenes with the foretaste of what is coming. Something I do wonder is what this story would have looked like if J.K. Rowling had been given the guarantee that this first book in the series would have been as successful as the later ones. Because I know fantasy and sci-fi are really difficult to get published, so making the book short like this, I guess it just keeps the book open to shorter readers and children alike, and I guess it's just one of those questions I do answer if she'd been given free rein to write the book as long and as densely as she would have liked. For the moment, I just want to briefly touch upon something that I discussed in my formalism episode, the structure, especially at the beginning of the story. The story has quite a traditional structure in that Harry is an orphan who discovers he is part of something larger after someone reveals that he has magical powers and he possesses them, and then he is taken away on an adventure/quest. That is very, very brief, but it is essentially the same opening sequence of that as Lord of the Rings, in that Frodo is an orphan who discovers he has a magical ring told to him by an older character who is then whisks him away on an adventure slash quest. Also very similar to that of Star Wars, Luke Skywalker, orphan, find out he is a Jedi, or will possibly become one, I guess, possesses the power of the Force and is told to him by the wise old Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi before being whisked away for a quest slash adventure. If you want to indulge me on that, go check out my formalism episode. But basically, there is a familiar structure to this, and it's clearly a winning structure. Now, one thing I noticed about the book was that, surprise, surprise, the book is better than the movie. I know, that old chestnut, that is to be expected. But I mean, like, the first half of the film, I've got to give it credit. The first half of the film is really good at being faithful to the text. But an interesting thing I noticed about the Philosopher's Stone when I was reading it is, it really felt like a magical mystery adventure. Harry, Ron, and Hermione are all trying to deduce what Snape is up to, what the Philosopher's Stone is, and how it all fits together. But in the book, as opposed to the film, it read as a much more logical story, and not as, let's say, silly. In the film, the three of them accidentally find themselves on the stairs that move them to level 3, which is out of bounds, and instead of going, "Oh, we shouldn't be here," and moving on, they say, "Oh no, we should be here," and enter, and then they then have to run and hide, which further drives them into level 3, and where they then find the three-headed dog Fluffy. And I guess it feels just a bit forced. Whereas in the book, they are out of bed late at night, being tricked by Malfoy, and so take refuge, accidentally finding themselves on level 3, which, when you're in a panic, feels more logical to end up somewhere you shouldn't, compared to actively acknowledging and committing further to it like it does in the films. Both instances end up in the same result and the discovery of Fluffy, but the book felt like it had a bit more finesse to it, and that makes it more of a pleasurable read. I also don't think the movie captured just how bad Ron is to Hermione, because in the first half of this book, he is a bit, and by a bit I mean a lot, he is a bit of a dick. All in all, I wouldn't say it's the best Harry Potter novel, but as it's the first in a series of seven books, it is the foundational book. The book building and establishing a world, and it has to be done. There's nothing wrong with that because now I am ready to charge into the second book, The Chamber of Secrets. But before we get there, we have to have a rating. The first book in the series, the stories it leads to every other, I'm going to rate this a 4 out of 5. So, what am I reading this week? This week I am reading a bit of W.B. Yeats. I picked up this beautiful edition in Rome. It is called The Tower, though that is not the poem I'm going to read for you. The book is the style of a Penguin cloth-bound classic, so it's a nice hardcover. And I was reading it the other day and I came across this lovely poem. It's simple, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking, but it's still beautiful, and so that means it's worth a read and a listen for you. So now I'm going to read for you The Wheel by W.B. Yeats. And it goes, "The Wheel. Through winter's time we call on spring, and through the spring on summer's call, and when abounding hedges ring, declare that winter's best of all. And after that there's nothing good, because the springtime has not come, nor know that what disturbs our blood is but a longing for the tomb." Now, before I close out the show, if you have listened this far, please consider hitting those 5 stars. I would really appreciate it. Also, feel free to head along to the website and support the pod. And of course, thank you, thank you, thank you for your attention. So I think it's time to end this episode. And today, to take us away, why don't we have another poem from Yeats? Because the book's right here in my hand, and why not? This poem is Youth and Age. "Much did I rage when I was young, being by the world oppressed, but now with flattering tongue, it speeds the parting guest."